Wake up! Wake up, wake up, wake up! Up you wake, up you wake, up you wake, up you wake! This is Mr. Senior Love Daddy, your voice of choice. The world's only 12-hour strong man on the air. Here on We Love Radio, 108 FM. The last on your dial, but first in your heart. And that's the truth, Root. Here I am. Am I here? You know it. It, you know. This is Mr. Senior Love Daddy doing the nasty to your ears to the nasty. Eyes only play the platters that matter, the matters they platter. And that's the Taruk Root.
From the heart of Bed-Stuy, you're listening to We Love Radio.
Doing the yin and the yang, the hip and the hop, the stupid fresh thing, the flippity flop. Oh! I have today's forecast for you. Hot! The color for today is black. That's right, black, so you can absorb some of these rays and save that heat for winter. So you want to get on out there, wear that black, and be involved. Also, today's temperature is going to rise up over 100 degrees, so that's a Jerry Curl alert. That's right, Jerry Curl alert. If you have a Jerry Curl, stay in the house, or you'll end up with a permanent plastic helmet on your head forever.
It's WGXC 90.7 FM.
Right.
Acra.
Keep going.
Hudson, Catskill, Phoenicia, and lots of other places.
That's an interesting addition.
And Valencia.
And
or
Valencia.
As they usually call it when you first land in Columbia County.
Valati.
Valati.
Very well done. Did you mention the online way
and online at WGXC.org.
Yes.
Just remember, this is your radio station, and to keep it going smoothly, it helps if you become a sustaining supporter. What that means is you go to our website, you click on donate, and you make a monthly donation, which we will take it out of your credit card for you. Actually, I think it notifies you every month to make sure you still want to do it, and just kind of give whatever you can give monthly. $10 a month, $5 a month.
Right.
It's not hard. It's not hard.
No, it's a good idea.
If you care about this station.
It's a very good idea.
Become a friend of WGXC now by going to wgxc.org/donate.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Crisafulli Brothers Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, Upstate New York's home services company since 1993, Red Carpet Service and Solutions. For more information, visit CRISBRO.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Empress Madu in Pauhawa, Hawaii. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Well, good evening, and welcome to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda. I'm Amanda.
I'm Jenny.
And we are a twice a month, every second and fourth Tuesday to be exact, movie talk show here on WGXC. We pick a theme each episode, and then we get on the air to talk about the movies that we watched separately for that theme. But before we get into tonight's theme, let's tell you about what's playing in the theaters around these parts. I'm going to start off by telling you about what is playing at Spotlight Theater in Hudson. That's also the 8-screen cinema on Fairview Avenue in Hudson. We have Borderlands, It Ends With Us, Harold and the Purple Crayon, which looks like it's maybe an adult Harold.
I think you're right. We saw the trailer at the drive-in, and I was like, no, there's definitely a kid in there.
Yeah.
And then
no, it's like a kid in a nightie in the book.
Yeah. It's an adult man. It's Harold, I think.
I don't think any adults should have that purple crayon.
No.
Anyways, Harold and the Purple Crayon, Trap, Deadpool and Wolverine, Twisters, Despicable Me 4, Inside Out 2. So that's what's playing tonight specifically, but this week at Spotlight Theater in Hudson, New York. You can find out more by going to thespotlighttheaters.com and selecting the Hudson location from the drop-down menu.
All right, now I'm going to tell you about what's playing at the Story Screen Cinema, which is the new movie theater on Fairview Avenue in Hudson. This week, we have Trap, Cuckoo, and Deadpool and Wolverine. And then starting this weekend, they have Alien Romulus. And if you're interested in any of those showtimes or any other information, because, I'm sorry, I actually also have to tell you, this week on Thursday, they're playing Interview with the Vampire.
Very important news.
So sorry, I just remembered to look at their coming up events. They also, next Thursday, have How to Train Your Dragon. And then the following Thursday, it's the girl with the dragon tattoo.
So many dragons.
They're doing some cool dragons, actually. I wonder what the deal is with that. So it looks like they're doing some cool, fun Thursday showings. So if you're interested in any of those movies or their showtimes or any of the other cool things that they have going on over there, you can head on over to storyscreenpresents.com.
Amazing. All right, I'm going to tell you about what's playing at the Wyndham Theater in Wyndham, New York. We have It Ends With Us, Despicable Me 4, Deadpool and Wolverine, and Twisters. You can find out more about showtimes and ticketing at WyndhamTheater.com, and that's spelled WyndhamTheater.com.
All right, now I'm going to tell you about what's playing at the Crandall Theater over in Chatham. We have Hundreds of Beavers, The Godfather, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, in case you didn't know, Touch, Ghostlight, Made in England, the films of Powell and Pressburger, Jamie Wyeth and the Unflinching Eye, Jurassic Park, and then they have a couple of cool summer movies still cooking. So if you're interested in any of those, including, it looks like they still have, no, I guess it's just Jurassic Park. I think that might be the last one. But if you're interested in any of those movies, you can find out more information at crandalltheater.org. And don't forget, that's a theater that ends in R-E.
Ooh.
So don't mix it up.
All right, I'm going to tell you about what's playing at the Greenville Drive-In, otherwise known as Drive-In 32. On August 16th and 17th, they're playing Pretty in Pink. And on August 18th, as part of their Sunday night series, they're playing Risky Business. And I guess part of their Sunday night series is that it's $10 a carload.
Oh, fun.
So you can load up your minivan with a bunch of your buds and take them all to see Risky Business on August 18th. You can find out more at drivein32.com.
So fun. I've never seen Risky Business.
I haven't either.
It might be time. Maybe yeah, we're going.
Exactly.
All right. So now, are you ready for my most complicated theater? It's time to tell you about what's playing at Upstate. So starting with the Star Cinema, which is the Upstate location in Rhinebeck, we have Ernest and Celestine, Seven Sentinels, Lighthouses of the Hudson River.
Ah.
We all know. Eyes Wide Shut, 10 Things I Hate About You, Sing Sing, Rushmore, Paul Cronin and the film's editorial consultant, Paul Golding. Sorry, so sorry to Paul. Between the Temples, Dee Dee, and It's Such a Beautiful Day. A couple of those titles are part of their upcoming series, which is 1999, The Greatest Year for Cinema or something, I think, yes, is what it's called,
yes.
Which I'm really looking forward to. I really want to see Eyes Wide Shut, a movie I've never seen before.
I know, me too. We're going to try to go.
Yeah, so check out the Upstate Films website for that. But then let me also tell you about what's playing at the Orpheum Theater, which is the location in Saugerties. We also have Ernest and Celestine, Kneecap, Woodstock 94, 30th Anniversary, The Virgin Suicides, Being John Malkovich, Magnolia, The Matrix, Twisters, Long Legs, and Thelma. And so, yeah, a bunch more of those movies are obviously part of their 1999 series, which I'm really stoked to see. They're also showing Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind at Olana on August 23rd. So if you're interested in any of those things, I would strongly suggest going to upstatefilms.org to find out the specific showtimes for any of those cool movies you want to see. Because you've never seen Magnolia in the theater. Sounds like pretty cool.
Exactly. I was but a wee thing in 1999.
Yeah,
but very, very low.
We were simply not allowed to see movies like Magnolia.
No,
then.
Absolutely
My
not.
My mom would not let me.
I know. I'll get into it after I say this last theater. But all right. So last but not least, maybe last?
I got one more. All right. We're close.
So we're going to talk about what's playing at the Highway Drive-In. Yeah. Which, by the way, is also, it's not just open on weekends. It's Wednesday through Sunday
yes.
now. So it's a 4-screen drive-in theater, and each screen there are 2 features. So on screen 1, we have Deadpool and Wolverine and Bad Boys Ride or Die. Screen 2 is Twisters and Borderlands. Screen 3 is Back to the Future and Back to the Future 2.
Fun.
And screen 4 is Trap and Long Legs. You can find out more by going to highwaydrivein.com, and that's spelled HIWAYdrivein.com.
All right, my last theater to tell you about is TSL in Hudson, otherwise known as Time and Space Limited. So this weekend, we have Made in England, Alphaville, Green Border, and Sebastian. And if you're interested in any of those showtimes or any of the other cool events that they have going on at TSL, you can go to timeandspace.org.
Amazing.
Thrilling.
So that's what's going on in your local theaters. I was just thinking many thoughts.
What are you thinking about?
Well, so I'm very excited about the Upstate Films 1999 series. Same. Criterion actually just did that as well, which is cool. On their streaming service, the Criterion channel did in 1999. Like, that's, remember for our last episode, which was Heatwave, yes. I watched Summer of Sam.
Yes.
That's a 1999. That's a 99.
Yeah. It is.
Stinks, I mean, of 1999, too, in a not so good way.
It is. It is one of those things where, like, when you start to look at the movies that came out in 1999, you do start to kind of lose your mind. You're like, what an incredible time.
Right? Well, gosh, people always talk about, so you're, of course, in 1999, you're still pre Y2K anxiety. Like, you're in the midst of Y2K anxiety. Mm-hmm. So there's just so much feeling happening surrounding the technology. Turn of the millennium.
Yeah, totally.
So of course, it only makes sense that you're going to get, like, a whole generation who's never experienced a turn of a millennium. So,
totally. Yeah.
And then you're pre 9/11.
Yeah. It's a real, like, just an intense inflection point for people making art at that time.
Yeah.
It's like everyone's feeling a lot of anxiety about a lot of different things.
Yeah. Like, you are intensely imagining the future and also deeply looking back.
Yeah, totally. It's fascinating.
Oh, God, it's beautiful.
I'm really stoked. I'm like thinking about going to see The Matrix. I'm thinking about going to see Eyes Wide Shut because I've never seen it. I just watched Magnolia for the first time, which longtime listeners will know because I talked about it on the show last year.
I know. Which episode was that for?
Coincidence. Yeah. Coincidence and Chance.
Which was a perfect one for that one.
It was perfect for that. Yeah. And it's just the curation that they did is incredible. Like, 10 Things I Hate About You also.
I know.
Like, I do really appreciate that Upstate is into doing a variety of, like, kinds of titles and kinds of genres.
Yeah.
They're like, we're going to throw
which you might as well, because, like, it's you have a lot of, like, people our age range who grew up with that movie, but also people who love that movie so much, you have kids now who are old enough to see it.
Maybe
and
I
like, what a
to
delight
you.
To
yeah. so
when
nice.
I, you know, it's like the joy of maybe having kids is taking them to see re-screenings of movies that
that's what I think about, where I'm like, I don't want to have children, but, like, it would
That'd
be cool. Yeah, it'd be really cool
somebody
to show
else,
them, like,
someone.
The movies that I loved as a kid. Yeah.
And the other
one of my friends, can you go ahead and have some kids? So, like, bring them, like, to see, like, can you hurry up?
Make it go fast, though, so they're, like, of age
see
stuff.
Could you have done this 10 years ago?
The other thing I'm thinking about is how much I am appreciating our new theater in Hudson, Story Screen, and that they, you know, it's nice to have a new theater for blockbusters, but also that they screen older stuff, like Interview with a Vampire.
I know. I didn't know. Like, I've only been to Story Screen once. I think, have you also only been once?
I've only been once. Yeah. They are very brand new. I think they opened
They're
in
fresh.
May.
Yeah. They just opened.
They're very fresh.
They seem really sweet, which is very cool. But yeah, I really loved going to their website literally just now before we started, being like, oh, excuse me, they're playing Interview with a Vampire on Thursday. Sorry, I need to clear my schedule really quick.
So fun.
So sorry.
Yeah.
It's really cute. I think I love when our local movie theaters. And we're really lucky to live in a place where there are a lot of local movie theaters that do a lot of really cool programming.
Yeah.
Where they play movies that I didn't have a chance to see in theaters. And then they're like, here, what if I just put this on for you real quick?
It's so nice. Or like,
I didn't know until recently, it was the Hudson Film Festival this weekend. Did you know about that?
I didn't. Well, sorry, no, I didn't.
Because I'm at a weird angle.
I'm gonna.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, God. Sorry, I'm trying to mess with Jenny's mic.
I know. I'm just like, I'm at like kind of a weird angle, which is my own
fault.
We're
in a relaxed angle.
I'm trying to just like chill out. It was the Hudson Film Festival this weekend, which I learned because they were screening at TSL the movie The Taste of Things, which I really wanted to see in theater, but I missed.
I also missed it. I know.
And I didn't go on Sunday because I was busy. But
I know.
It's like, it's very cool that we live in a place where they're always doing that stuff. Like, there was the Woodstock Film. Was it still happening? The Woodstock Film Festival is also usually in the summertime.
I think it happens in, or this one is happening in October, maybe. Yeah. But they're always running kind of fun.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Because when I went to see, I saw the TV Glow, that was supposedly also part of the Woodstock Film Festival, which I'm like, it's May.
Yeah. I think they're like doing year-round kind of
associative
programming. But yeah. We are very lucky.
Pretty great place for that.
We are really, really
pretty
lucky.
Cool.
So, in honor of the end of summer.
Don't say
that. I know. It is not the end of summer yet.
But it is
August. And I am a firm believer in... summer around here, we have like kind of 4 months.
Yeah,
September, totally. Even into October.
Early October, it's still like in the 70s, easy.
But in the spirit of, let's say, maybe youthfulness and like the closeness to school, right?
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
So summer,
August
ends
is really
the end of August,
yeah.
And so in the spirit of high summer and the melancholic feelings around summer ending, our theme for tonight is summer flings.
It's true.
Summer romance, baby. Ugh. Is it meant to last? I don't know. Summer is a totally, you're a different person. It's a different time of your life.
It's so true. We become somebody different during the months of June to August.
When you're a young person in school.
When you're a young person
me,
in school.
Me, right now, I'm just the same me as I am year round. But
it's true. I mean, like we talked about in our last episode, which was Heat Wave. It really is when you're hot, you're sweaty, things are heightened. It feels like everyone's kind of chasing that last feeling before the summer really ends. And it's, you know, everything feels like it's going to leave soon.
Yeah.
And
it does.
Yeah, it's a scary feeling to be like, I mean, I think my adult experience of this is vegetable seasons.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
Fruit and vegetable seasons.
Exactly, but as far as like
the blueberries are going to be gone soon.
I mean, sugar snap peas, they came and they went
God,
so fast.
They went
I know,
so
our
fast.
Favorite summer vegetable.
We
had such a hot summer and their season was extra short.
God, I saw Amanda eating sugar snap peas in the kitchen at work a couple weeks ago and I was like, oh, Where'd you get those?
Who's your guy?
I only got one bag of those this year, and then I thought they were gone.
I know. Like, I know.
She found a hookup.
I ate some the other night because I had the rest of like a rotting bag.
I mean, you have to. You have no choice but to eat them, regardless. But yeah, that's the adult version of this. But the kid and like, I feel like the, you know, young at heart.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, young 20s. Yeah. All the youthfulness of it is like almost that same thing as like a vacation romance where you're going to let everything flow forward into the present moment.
Yes.
Like completely recklessly isn't the wrong word, but without reservation.
Uninhibited.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Who knows what's going to come in a couple months.
Exactly.
I'm never going to see you again.
There's a sense of a timeline with summer when you're young.
Yeah.
And you feel that urgency.
Yeah, totally.
Ugh. And like expressions of love with urgency are some of the most moving.
It's potent.
It's potent.
I want to hear. We decided as a theme for, to be very clear, to talk about summer flings where, you know, you go somewhere. Maybe you travel. Maybe you go to a new location.
Yeah.
You find a sweet thing for a couple months, but it can't last because you have to leave. The summer will end. You got to move on. A very fruitful, subject for movies. For movies and stories of all kinds.
Exactly. I'm very excited to tell you about what I watched. I watched two movies.
Please tell me about what you watched.
So usually I tell you about what I watched chronologically, but I'm just going to go for the big ones. Yeah. So sometimes when you haven't seen a movie that everybody else saw in its prime, you feel a little left out.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes you feel extremely lucky because everybody else wishes they could see this movie for the first time ever. I watched perhaps one of the most quintessential movies for this category. Uh-huh. I watched Call Me By Your Name for the first time.
Welcome.
I watched it last night.
Insane to watch that in a post-Army Hammer world, kind of.
I know. Also, like, I, like, don't care enough where I'm like, I mean,
he works as a character in that movie that, like, it doesn't... That is the thing. Sorry, not to interrupt you. A thing that's kind of cool about Army Hammer being canceled is that he's, like, not a good enough actor for his, like, screen presence to matter.
Exactly. Well, and also because... So, anyways, before I get into it. Yeah, he's not the main character. He is this kind of, like... He does have an emotional role in the story, like, or his own emotions are present in the story, but he does, like, we are following Elio, our main character, primarily, and so Army Hammer is already a memory.
Right. He's not, he's not the protagonist. He's he's like an energy.
He's already an important memory to us.
Oh.
So,
no. I understand why you texted me last night being like, I'm crying right now.
Yeah. I was like, so H-O-R-N-Y. And then I was just sobbing.
That is the power of Call Me By Your Name. Is that exactly. So H-O-R-N-Y.
And then I was like devastated. And I'm like, I'm going to sleep. All right. So before I get into it. For those of you who don't know, which I'm sure most of you do because I'm very late to the game. And for that, that's right, y'all. I'm lucky. Because I got to, in this year of our Lord, 2024, enjoy for the first time 2017's Call Me By Your Name.
You're so lucky.
Directed by Luca Guadagnino. Yes. Starring Timothée Chalamet and Armie Hammer. Timothée Chalamet plays Elio, who's the son of a very cool, intellectual, pan-European American couple who own a villa in northern Italy. And every summer, Elio's father has a research assistant come and stay with them for 6 weeks. And this particular summer in 1983, it is a very tall, strapping young man named Oliver. And this movie is just a couple minutes over 2 hours. And it is incredible the way that it takes its time letting this romance blossom between Oliver and Elio. Because the way that it, like, I have so much to say about this movie, but so much that I also, like, because I just watched it last night, I can't even say.
Yeah, totally.
But, like,
so fresh.
The way that it takes its time just gently letting this relationship unfold, it makes it almost feel like it is in real time.
Yes.
Even though it's 6 weeks, and obviously this movie does not last 6 weeks in actual minute time, but the way that it's told is so expertly that like it really it takes its time so that it actually I actually believe that this is something that happened over 6 weeks.
Totally. Yeah. Incredible pacing.
It so again just like so with such ease portrays a relationship that is very complex, not only because like all sexual and romantic feelings are complex in ways, but also because it's a gay romance and it's the 80s. Mm-hmm. And like it's and because it's also somebody who's Elio's 17 and Oliver's probably in his mid-20s. Yeah. Like it's like there's a lot of complexity, but like also there's simplicity to we as audience members who are likely older, like recognize the significance of a relationship when you are really young. Again, the character you're primarily following is Elio, who's 17. So like most of us have that experience with a relationship that feels incredibly powerful, but it's in our past and we think about it fondly and like something important or hopefully fondly, but like either way, like something really, that we learned a lot from.
Right, like very formative.
Very formative, that's the word. And like, so in that way, there's something like sweetly simple about it, mm-hmm. In that it's very relatable, and it is a part of being a young person.
Right, totally.
Is having really complicated feelings about something that's potentially relatively, when you're older, relatively simple.
Yeah, but, totally.
And again, yeah, just, it just tells this story with such ease.
Yeah.
It's so nice.
It's such a beautiful, sun-soaked movie about, like, it is, there's something about a movie that can transport you back to that time in your life, even though, like, obviously we were not 17 in 1983, but, like, there's something about this incredibly human story that is really relatable on, like, a number of levels where, like, you can, like, it's so expertly crafted to be from Elio's perspective, where, like, he's also taken very seriously, even though he is that, at that age where, like, everything feels so significant and so intense, but, like, in retrospect, you're like, God, I was experiencing things on such a heightened level because I was 17 and, like, my emotions were totally out of control.
Exactly.
But, like, it's such a,
but they
a,
were
like,
still real.
But they were, like, real. Yeah, and it, like, it feels like such a loving and, like, beautiful exploration of that feeling. Like, it doesn't feel... It's not condescending at all.
No.
It's not patronizing. It's very much like it's taking his feelings very seriously.
Yeah.
And also taking his relationship with Oliver very seriously, even though it is like this summer fling. Like, part of it is that it can't last.
Yeah.
Like, it has, like, Oliver has to leave. He is, I believe he's meant to be like 24 in the novel.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, he is like, it was never going to last. He has a girlfriend. Like, it's not something that's going to ever work out for them forever. But, like, you have this incredibly formative experience as a young person, and, like, the film treats it so seriously and so sensitively that, like, it just, it, you really do, you fall right into it. Like, it's so captivating.
It's so, and also, like, yeah, like, they take Elio seriously, and also Oliver, again, like we said at the beginning of it, where Armie Hammer's Oliver is, you know, like, the secondary in this story, mm-hmm. that, like, we're really,
we're following Elio
primarily, it's Elio's perspective, but, like, it's not just the story of a younger person like falling in love with an older person who, like, sure, maybe they have feelings, or maybe they're just, like, getting some young peace, but like it's not that, like, they actually, the way that they involve Oliver's deeper feelings, despite not being the main character, is really incredible. Like, he, like, you can tell that he is, again, because of the time that it's in, like, he is also kind of taking full advantage of this very special time, this the 6 weeks that he has to like actually allow himself to, like, I know it's gonna make me cry to, like, still be within the youth that he's still a part of,
totally.
And, like, to be in, like,
in the space where, like, he can have this relationship.
Exactly.
Where, like, outside of this really special place, he cannot do
he
that.
Cannot. Exactly. Yeah. It's like a really, it's an Eden of a summer.
It's so...
In which, he can.
Yeah,
exactly. He can enjoy a relationship like that. He, like, I love the way that Elio is portrayed as, like, truly a 17-year-old.
Yes.
And that he's, like, kind of squirmy and silly. But Elio's... Or Oliver is older, but not that much older. So it's still, like, the way that they flirt almost has this, like, sweet brotherliness to it. And, like, I'm at a loss.
It's really, it's just, like, it's a really special movie.
It's
making me really want to rewatch it because I haven't seen it since it came out. But I also love, like, there's this really, moving scene near the end with Michael Stuhlbarg, who plays Elio's father, who has, like he's the person who has Oliver as his research assistant and, like, clearly has a good relationship with both of them. But he, like, gives this monologue to Elio while he's basically like mourning his relationship with Oliver and how it can't last forever.
Yeah.
In part because it's a summer fling, but also in part because it's just like the time and place where they're at and how much it's part of it is that Oliver is older and like it's not going to work between them.
Yeah.
And it's just this like incredibly sensitive, loving monologue about his own life.
Yeah.
That really, it just is such a, it's the kind of thing that you don't really see in this movie.
Yeah.
Where often, especially, I mean, like now we live in kind of a different era of queer movies where we have a little bit more than we used to. But like very infrequently do you have a movie set in an earlier time with queer people who are not like dealing with homophobia as like their main antagonist.
No.
Which is really like disheartening and not that interesting as like a subject matter.
Like, and we all know.
And for this one, it's really about the all of the other obstacles to their relationships. Like obviously that's part of it because of the time that they're living in, but like there's so many other things going on there. And this monologue with Michael Stuhlbarg is like such a beautiful, like loving like it's just this moment where he's really revealing himself to his son and also seeing his son as like a whole person. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like such a magical moment that you don't get in this kind of movie.
It's true. I mean, like that speech, this movie has many pinnacles and that speech is one of them. Like that, like it's true what you're saying, where it's like in the story as it's being told, like we don't have any scenes where anybody's interacting with like homophobia directly, right, totally. Right? Like you do have Oliver talking about like, oh, like your parents, they know and they're so cool about it. My dad would commit me. Like there's mentions like of it, there, of course. Yeah. And like they, when they're in public, like they keep everything's very secretive. So it is, I mean, even just the way that is implied, instead of being hit over the head with it, it's like, I know.
Right,
I know that it's 1983.
Like, I'm an adult.
Yeah. Like, I know, like, I know that this is hard.
Totally.
You know?
But, like, but not taking that as, like, the main, which is also, I mean, that's also true in the novel. Like, that's not part of what is, it's part of the obstacle to their relationship, but it's not the main part of it.
Exactly.
It's, like, there's so much more going on there with, like, this genuine, like, human story about these two people who are forming this, like, really special, really brief connection.
Yeah.
And that's part of what makes it so special is that it is this, like, flashpoint in their lives where it can only be those 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And, like, it just feels like, it's just such a humane story in that way.
It really is. Well, again, like I like feel like I interrupted myself, but yeah, like the father's speech, among other things, is about leaning into the wonder and the pain of those relationships.
Absolutely.
And those lost things. Yeah, because totally. If you don't, you deny yourself this like full feeling, and thus like you strip away like these parts of you that like could still be there if you just fully leaned into those feelings. Like you won't, you could strip away those things like and feel nothing instead of feeling sadness, or you can feel sadness and like
and also
fully
love
into it. And love, and like that speech not only makes that movie relatable to everybody who's ever loved,
totally.
Which it already is, but let's say like we're thinking of an audience who maybe has more difficulty placing themselves in a story like that, but like, so yeah, like that speech. Oh.
Whenever I think about Call Me By Your Name, I actually do think about that scene first now.
Oh yeah.
Like, I remember I read the book first and I like was really into it, and then when the movie came out, like somehow that scene has really subsumed a lot of it to me, where I do just think about it and I'm like,
oh, it's so, it's so
the agony and ecstasy of being a person is like, so it's incredible.
It is. Yeah, that is like, and like what a valuable lesson that we can all hope to learn in our lives, and we probably didn't have like a cool ass dad who told us that when we like had a summer tryst with an older hottie, you know. Like we probably didn't have like a cool archaeologist dad smoking cigs in his Italian villa study.
Can you, like, I do feel like an intrinsic part of the summer fling, and like maybe this is just because I only watched movies that took place in Europe, but I'm like, a big part of it is like going to.
I also only watched movies that took place in Europe.
Because that's what they all are.
I know. It's true. Like,
you go to an ancient European city and you have a brief romance and you are surrounded by beauty all around you.
Yeah.
And you are confounded.
Yeah.
And then it ends.
Exactly.
And it's heartbreaking.
I know. And oh God, I mean, what an important story to tell. Again, I keep repeating myself, because no matter who you are and who you're attracted to, you probably will relate to that feeling on some way.
Totally.
Again, it's like that. Yeah. Doesn't even, I was going to say the urgency of youth, but it doesn't even require youth. It just requires knowing that this situation and this like perfect chemistry of things is only going to last for a certain amount of time.
I mean, that is part of the magic of it, is that it can't last forever, because that is like, I mean, romance is one of those things that requires, like, for it to live for a long time, it requires a certain amount of like investment in this way that isn't just like fun and free.
Yeah.
You know, whereas like these summer romance, that's part of the fling, is that it's like, we're going to let go of all the difficulty. We're just going to have a good time.
Exactly.
And then it's going to end.
Exactly.
And I'm going to move on. It's going to hurt.
Yeah, like we don't always have to think about this ever getting like quote unquote real.
Right, exactly.
Even though of course it is real, but like we don't ever have to think about how this is going to function in our daily lives. What else was I going to say briefly about that movie, other than in my notes where I said coming for me with that Sufjan.
Oh, bro.
Just how well it portrays High Summer.
Yes. It's such a good sweat movie.
We have a lot of very juicy stone fruit.
Yes.
The peaches. And then there's also a brief scene, just like a tiny montage of bathing suits hanging on faucets.
Oh, yes.
That's all I wanted to say. The summer texture in this movie is so expert.
Just like the sound of cicadas and crickets everywhere they go. Like, just like, yeah, the texture of, like, the visual texture and the audio texture in that movie are unmatched.
Elio's dad is like digging up statues of twinks, like from Lake Garda. It's so good.
It is like truly the quintessential summer movie, because it is like,
I know, I'm like, I'm so lucky that the perfect movie for this category is a movie that I haven't seen.
God, it is so, as soon as you said it, I was like, oh my God, of course that's a summer fling movie. I can't believe it didn't even occur to me.
I mean, because you've already seen it. Yeah, but try to focus, if audience members do not know, Jenny and I try to focus on movies we have not already watched.
It's true. That's part of the conceit of our show. But it is just like, it's such a green movie. It's such a like the sun is so powerful. There are a lot of movies that are incredible at like depicting a certain season and depicting a certain area, but like there's something about that one that is so
verdant.
God, you're so verdant. Nothing makes me want to hang out in the Italian countryside. Like, Call Me by Your Name.
I know.
Like, oh my God.
I know. I'm sorry. We've spent the first 40 minutes of this show
talking about that. I know. That's why I was like, you know what? I'm going to bring this one up first.
Just like the Michael Clayton episode. Instead of the movie that I watched first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like the Michael Clayton episode, which, so my partner, our beloved friend, Chris.
Yes.
Watched Perfect Days last night.
I still have
not seen it.
Yeah, I haven't either.
But I was texting with him being like, oh, I'm excited that I haven't seen it and I also don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
I look forward to entering it knowing nothing. And he was like, I'm not going to spoil anything, but I do have to tell you that in one review that I read, they talked about like one technique used in this movie that's also employed in Call Me by Your Name and Michael Clayton.
Yo! The dim the lights triple stack of Michael Clayton, Call Me by Your Name, and Perfect Days. Incredible. I know. I am dying to see Perfect Days.
But I'm dying to hear about what you watched.
All right. I'm going to tell you about the first movie that I watched, which was not a summer fling movie in the traditional sense, but I have to talk about it because it was the best movie that I watched. This was recommended to me by our good friends of the show, Chuck and Ellen.
Oh,
this is an Eric Romare movie called The Green Ray.
Oh,
from 1986.
I've heard of it.
I had not heard of it until they told me about it, and they were both like, it blew our socks off. It's like incredible. Best movie I've seen this year. From 1986. It is stunning. I've never seen any Eric Romare movies. He's like a French director who I think like kind of famously does summer movies. And not all of them are, but a lot of them are about like people going on summer vacations and having weird times. The Green Ray is beautiful. It's such a, it is so nice to watch like a cinematic masterpiece, just like random, just you know, like have a nice Saturday night where you throw on a cinematic masterpiece just for fun.
It's like, so cool that there's actually like a lot of them. You'd think so that lucky. There wouldn't be.
No, we're swimming in them.
But there's actually so many.
They're all around us.
It's like Sunday night when I watch Clute.
Exactly. I'm yes.
Like, bless.
Bless. God bless. So The Green Ray, Le Rayon Vert, if Ooh. You will, if you're French. Is about this woman named Delphine, who is played by Marie Riviere, who is seemingly like in her mid to late 20s and is lost. Like, she has recently called off an engagement with her fiance. It seems like he's maybe the one who did it because she's still really, really reeling from it. Mm. I believe his name is Jean-Pierre, but we never see him because he's not important. This is about Delphine. Delphine is living in Paris. It's the 80s. She is recently heartbroken, but she lives by herself in this like beautiful apartment, as they always do. And in France, apparently, depending on what your job is, you just get like a month off because that's just what they do there.
It's very, very cool.
And so she's deciding what to do with her month off because she's got all this time. And she is supposed to go on a seaside vacation with her friend Caroline. Oh. But Caroline cancels on her. Classic Caroline. Can't trust her.
So busy.
And so Delphine is basically deciding what to do with her time. She's like, do I go by myself? That seems really sad. Like, her whole thing is basically like, she feels incredibly lonely. And she has friends. And she has family members who she's interacting with and seeing regularly, but like nothing is cutting through this intense sadness that she feels, which is really relatable to me as a person who gets seasonal depression in the summer.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
Very much a like
an intense loneliness.
Totally.
Is a feeling we often are plagued with.
Absolutely. And she, it just has this incredible sense of, like, it's a loneliness that I've never really seen depicted in this way, where she is surrounded by people. People are coming up to her to talk to her, and she just can't do it. Like, she can't find the words to speak back to them. She can't find the energy to, like, interact with them in this way. That it seems that she genuinely wants to because she feels so deeply alone, but she just can't access it. And so the movie it's a really interesting format where each day has like a title card that says the day, like the, I think it starts with July 2nd or something. And so it's like De Juillet, 1986 or whatever. Don't know how to say 1986 anymore. It's been a long time. Every single day gets a title card.
Yeah.
And so through the movie, you're experiencing like the first 2 weeks of July where she's trying to find somebody to go on vacation with. And then she does kind of end up going with a friend to a different seaside location with her family, but kind of instantly feels a little alienated because she's Delphine. Love her to death. Relate to her deeply. She's a difficult person to get along with. Like, she goes on this family vacation with her friend. Instantly, like, you know, they're sitting down to dinner with her friend's family and she's a vegetarian and she this argument with them about,
she's one of those
she's like a little bit difficult, but in this way that is so, she's not asking a lot, she has a really powerful point of view but also has a really hard time connecting with people. So it is like, it's this incredible like texture of a conversation where she's like trying so hard to like be likable, but also she just can't be because she has these things like these hangups.
Yeah.
Where she's like, I want to get along with you, but I, and she's like, there is, it's, you know, whatever you want to do is fine. But also like, I don't eat meat because I think it's wrong.
Yeah.
Like, but then like pursues the conversation.
Yeah.
And so a thing that's really beautiful about this movie is that it is basically just a series of conversations that Delphine has. And then they're almost always punctuated by her going out into some form of nature, being surrounded by incredible beauty and just crying. Yeah. Like, she just can't stop crying because she's can't relate so lonely. I know, literally.
To, like, being surrounded by incredible natural beauty and
just cry. Like, she just feels, it's part of, partially that, but she also just feels, I think she is so
deeply lonely.
Sad and so deeply lonely that she can't access any of those feelings. Like,
yeah.
That when you normally go out into nature and you cry because it's beautiful, it's like, it's because you're experiencing something. And for her, it's like she's going out and feeling nothing.
Yeah.
And like, that's why she's so sad.
Oh, man.
And so it's like, she basically just goes on this series of like, she goes on this vacation with her friend and then randomly is like, I can't be here, and like leaves.
Yeah.
And then she decides to go into the mountains to meet a different person there. And she gets there. The person that she's supposed to meet to get the keys isn't there. And so she like goes for a hike like in the French Alps, cries, comes back when her friend is there and is like, I'm sorry, I have to go. Takes her bags and goes home. Oh, like, it's, wow. She does this like a couple of times in a row because she's just so inconceivably sad.
Yeah.
Like, she just cannot, she feels so lost.
Yeah,
it's like, it's painful to watch because you are like, Delphine, just stay, know, it's gonna be okay.
Yeah, like she'll be okay eventually, but
she can't do it. She's like at this point in her life where it's just so painful for her. And so on one of these trips where she is walking around like a seaside village alone, she overhears this group of older people talking about, like, they're not like actually a book club, but it is like a handful of women and men who are like all clearly in their 60s and 70s talking about books that they've read recently.
Mm.
And one of them is talking about a novel called Le Rayon Vert, The Green Ray, which I'm trying to remember who wrote it. It's not Henry James. I can't remember. It's like, it's definitely a novelist that I've heard of, but this woman is talking about it. Like, it's this really beautiful, like, fairy tale, about how when you're watching the sunset, the very last ray that you see, it's not always, but sometimes if the atmosphere is just right,
mm-hmm.
the very last ray you see is this like bright green light as the mm-hmm. sun is disappearing below the horizon. And as a part of this novel, the like fairy tale is that if you're looking at the green ray with somebody else, you know and understand your own thoughts and the thoughts of the people with you. And so it's like, Delphine is sitting there just kind of listening to this, and she feels really moved by it, clearly. And so you spend the rest of the movie being like, when are we going to see that green ray?
Yeah,
when are we going to see that green ray? And so the thing about this movie is that there isn't really a summer fling because she keeps kind of running into people who are trying to start something with her, and she just can't access it.
It works for the theme still, though.
And this is one of those movies that you can't spoil because it is just people having conversations over and over again. And so there isn't anything, like, the plot is not, it's not action-based, it's emotional. And so you do, at the very end, she kind of has a connection with this guy in the train station because she's about to go home again from another vacation that she can't handle.
Mm.
And he's just going a couple minutes down the road to, like, work somewhere. And she's like, they, like, suddenly strike up a conversation and are connecting. And she's like, can I come with you? Which is, like, the most forward she's been the whole movie. And they go and they end up hanging out and watching the sunset. And I'm like, do I tell you?
Yeah, just
there is.
Let it rip.
The last shot of the movie is the two of them seeing the green ray, and it's like I burst into tears. Like, it's one of those movies where while I was watching it, I was like, I understand why my beautiful friends Chuck and Ellen really liked this movie. Like, it is really thoughtful and sweet, and like it has this really. I mean, it has that like a French 80s movie where like it looks incredible. All of the actors are like very real. Like, it feels very lived in and very naturalistic. But I was kind of like, I think I understand why they like this movie, but I'm like, why is it 5 stars? And then the very, very end, I was like, oh.
Yeah, no, sometimes.
Oh, I get it.
Sometimes movies really are.
Got me.
the payoff.
Yeah.
Like, and it feels like the end is worth the journey you've got. Like, and you know, the journey that you've gone on has to be entertaining or beautiful or engaging enough.
Totally. Yeah. And it is.
But like, sometimes it's still like, okay, not necessarily five star engaging, but then that last.
Like, I was really enjoying it, but it wasn't necessary. Like, and I definitely am relating to Delphine in this way where I'm like, yeah, totally. Like, I also, like, that deep loneliness is, like, so relatable and so painful. And, like, everyone she interacts with is so fascinating. And it is, like, it's this really interesting series of conversations. But, yeah, like, that very end, like, I did not expect it. Like, I was watching it being like, oh, my God, I can't wait. And then, like, genuinely... Like, it hits the green ray, the credits roll. I, like, start sobbing.
Yeah.
Like, out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Well,
this is crazy.
What a special thing for, like, a summer romance, a summer fling movie to, like, have the fling start at the credits rolling.
Yes, like, absolutely. That's all,
like, I'm cool with seeing this story be, like, about just one portion of the fling, one person involved, everything that led up to... getting them to that moment.
Right. It also, it felt like, I mean, it's a summer fling with herself. Like, it's her getting, it's her, because, like, she doesn't actually ever become comfortable with being alone, but that is her, like, practicing at being alone.
Yeah.
And it is, like, it's really beautiful to watch. It's great. It's also, the actress who plays Delphine is stunning. Stunning. As they always are. All these, like, French actors. But yeah, I would strongly recommend The Green Ray. I also think, like, even though I have not told you how it ends, it doesn't take away from it. It's still, like, it's just a really beautiful watch. And, like, it's so nice to see those movies where it is, like, this is an art piece. It's so nice. It's so nice to indulge, especially after I watch, like, some dumb.
Yeah, like, right? Like, you're like,
stupid movie. And I'm like, oh, no, their art cinema is art.
It really is.
But anyway, that's The Green Ray. Directed by Eric Rohmer, which I would strongly recommend.
Ugh, we spent so much time talking about Call Me By Your Name.
We don't have a lot of time left, but it's okay.
Okay, so my second movie.
Yes, tell me.
Another European summer romance.
Yes.
Americans in Europe.
Yep.
And also ends with people leaving on a train.
Heartbreaking.
It is. No, I did watch Before Sunrise. Because I had also never seen it. I did.
It's so good.
It's really good. It's so good. All right. So another big one, right? Richard Linklater, 1995, starring Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. Ethan Hawke plays they're both 20-something. Like, let's say, like, I think they're, like, 21, 20 even.
Totally. They're babies.
Ethan Hawke plays Jesse, who is traveling on the Eurorail and meets... the young Celine, played by Julie Delpy, and they strike up a conversation, and thus the story is unfolding in real time. They spend a day and a night together. They decide to get off the train together after striking up conversation in Vienna, and they spend the rest of the day and night together in Vienna. And then they know that they have to leave. He's getting on a flight back home the next day. She has to go back to school. They know that they have to leave each other. And so they separate by the dawn.
Heartbreaking.
And it really is. So again, like the distilled version of what we're talking about, totally. Where it's the,
these especially are like the two truest summer fling movies.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Like, yeah, like there's something very distilled about, Before Sunrise, where it's like, I mean, because it again is like a real time type story where it's like, all right, this is a 24
is
hours.
Yeah, this is
less
get.
Than.
Yeah.
Ethan Hawke's character, like, I was like, I would never get off a train with this guy.
Right, literally,
oh my
same.
God. Like, he just, he's very, not condescending. He's very
negative. Forward. And
he's very
negative.
Forward and, like, kind of, I like the way his character is played because it feels like a real person,
yes,
but
absolutely.
He's kind of like, he's kind of squirrely and, like, very negative. Mm-hmm. And, very, very, very much feels like a realistic 20-something, like, young 20-somethings guy, like, college-educated guy.
Totally, yeah.
Who's, like, thinking maybe a little too much about the wrong things.
Yeah.
And Julie Delpy is, I mean, we're all here to fall in love with her. God. Like, because this is Linklater, and it's, I think it is kind of based off an experience that we had. Like, we are Jesse's Ethan Hawke. Yeah, we're falling in love with Julie Delpy.
Yeah, 100%.
We're falling in love with Celine, who is, like, very graceful and gorgeous and also incredibly intelligent. And the two of them have, like, very easy flowing conversation, but she I find her so, her character so forgiving of Jesse Ethan Hawke's, like, kind of idiocy, like anxious idiocy. But yeah, it's funny. So, you know, the whole time, again, this is the big movie that I've never seen, just like Call Me by Your Name. And the whole time, like, I'm enjoying myself, but I'm, you know, I'm not at all crushing on Ethan Hawke's character. But then still, toward the end of the movie, when they finally talk about how they are going to have to say goodbye in a few hours, I start sobbing.
Dude,
like, it's even though I'm like, yeah, that's fine. You guys are having this amazing one day together. It's like, you know, no big deal. I don't really believe that people like you two specific characters would actually ever fall in love or work out in the long run, which they do talk about.
Right.
I still feel so sad.
It's the magic of that movie is that it is like you. I also felt that way because I watched it for the first time not that long ago myself. And it's like the characters kind of require like a, it's not like a suspension of disbelief, but it's just like you have to kind of let go of what you think is attractive to a person and just like invest yourself in what they're doing with each other.
Yeah.
And like they have such a powerful connection and it is so tangible that like even though like I also am like Ethan Hawke is like not like I'm like not interested in Jesse.
No, he's so annoying.
But like their connection is so real and like she's clearly vibing with it in this way that is incredibly moving and like you have no choice but to give yourself over to it.
Yeah.
And then like as soon as they realize that it can't last, they know that it can't last.
Yeah.
It's like it's so painful.
Exactly. It's horrible. Like they always knew. They went into it knowing, and then when they have to speak it out loud is when it's heartbreaking, because then you also have to as the viewer, you also have to be like, I know, dude. Shut up. And yeah, just again, I already said this, but the very realistic youthfulness of it, where I think that's maybe why I'm unattracted to their attraction to each other, is I'm like,
I recognize
it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I see something in it that I know, and it's, I'm like, I've had this.
Yeah,
I've had
totally.
This. And also, I mean, this song, the big like music feature from this song is from this movie is the song "Come Here" by Kath Bloom, which is just a devastating track. And I mean, when that song first started playing, it's very early on in their flirtation, and I'm like, just get out of here.
I can't.
I will set myself on fire.
Don't make me watch this.
Jenny. Yeah.
It hoits. I was looking at my phone because I read like an insanely devastating fact about this movie earlier this year. And I was like, can I share with you this insanely devastating fact?
Share me.
So it is based on an experience that Richard Linklater had. So maybe you actually already know.
But
this.
I don't remember the details.
Okay, I had to Google it because I was like, what exactly happened? So he had this experience with a woman named Amy, Richard Linklater, that is. I think he also got married. There are two other movies in the Before trilogy.
Yeah, Sunset and Before Midnight, neither of which I've seen.
I've never seen Before Midnight. I recently watched Before Sunset, which is really good because it is like a... the reason that I haven't watched Before Midnight is because I think it's going to be too sad.
Yeah.
Before Sunset's really beautiful because they do have like a reunion in it, and it's like very special and sweet. And it is, I think it's like 10 or 20 years later, so it is like it's significant. But the real experience that Richard Linklater had was he met this woman named Amy. He always hoped that he would reunite with her. And, like, part of the reason that he made Before Sunrise, at least, like, if this article is to be believed, is because he was, like, hoping that she would see it and they could reconnect. Even though I believe he was already married at that time.
Mm.
However, before the movie, he contacted her to ask her to come to the premiere and she never answered. And so he thought that she had just moved on. But she passed away in a motorcycle accident like a year or two after they met.
Oh, man.
So it's like, it just, like a true two souls passing on this earth who like could never reconnect.
Yeah.
And it just is heartbreaking to think about, where he's like reaching out to her and she never answers. And it's like, it's because she can't, not because she doesn't, not because she didn't feel it. It's just so, it hoits, dude.
It hoits. I mean, there's a lot more to say. We didn't even get to talk about your other movie.
It doesn't matter. These are so much more important than what I watched. I watched some dumb
I know. Stuff. I just luckily like hadn't seen the big one.
I mean, thank God. That was such a pleasure to talk to you about.
So good. Oh man, it really does hoit.
It hoits.
I mean, that I should
I'm sorry
say
to end on that.
No, I should say in the very end of Before Sunrise, for those who haven't seen it, they leave on the train. They go their separate ways on the train, and they say that they're going to meet up again in 6 months.
It's beautiful.
We'll see.
We'll see. I would strongly recommend Before Sunset to those of you who haven't seen it. It's great.
Summer doesn't last forever.
Summer
guys.
Doesn't last forever, just so. Like this show.
Exactly, just like this show. So fall in love.